Hey everybody, it's Chuck Arfine. Welcome to the White Sox Talk Podcast. It is brought to you, as always, by our great friends at Wintrust. Okay, it's January. It's freezing in Chicago. The hot stove is even colder because of the lockout. But you know what? I don't care. I need some baseball talk in my life. I imagine you do too. So let's start the new year focusing on two names we've been hearing a lot, talking about a lot in connection with the White Sox, and that's Mets right fielder Michael Conforto and Mets second baseman Jeff McNeil. Conforto's a free agent. McNeil is reportedly going to be on the trading block after the lockout ends. Both seem like great fits with the White Sox. Or are they? On the podcast, we've got Wayne Randazzo, radio voice of the Mets. Used to work at The Score and WBBM Radio in Chicago. He also calls games for the Big Ten Network and Fox Sports. I think he's watched every game Conforto and McNeil have played since 2019. He knows what they're both like on the field and in the clubhouse. Wayne's going to give us the inside scoop on both of these two intriguing targets for the White Sox. We're talking McNeil and Conforto with Randazzo. It's coming your way.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With White Sox checking, you'll score a Sox debit card. Plus, you'll get a special offer when you open online today at wintrust.com/SoxTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
That ball hit deep, way back! Deep to left field!
Holy cow! Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead!
Jimenez leaves the ballpark!
You can't put it on the board! Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
All right, Wayne Randazzo. It has been a long, long time. What was the last year you worked in Chicago? It feels like you were just here, but then again, something tells me it was probably like 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, you're right, actually. It was early 2015 I got hired by the Mets, so... It's been exactly 7 years since I left The Score and left the Kane County Cougars and went to New York.
Was this like a dream job? I mean, you're calling a Major League Baseball team's games on the radio, right? Is this what you always were looking for?
Yeah, I mean, really always. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be pursued as a kid and, you know, went after it in high school and college any way I could, and did minor league baseball for several years, and I was really lucky to get the job at The Score because that was really, you know, the first time that I was really on anybody's radar or on the map at all and had my name out there. I owe a lot to The Score for helping me get to where I am. I filled in for Ranji sometimes on White Sox pre and post, you know, that kind of helped me out too. And it was a really good experience there. So, you know, I was lucky to land with the Mets and in New York and that they had a job for me. And it's been a great 7 years there.
Well, we've been talking so much about Jeff McNeil and Michael Conforto and wondering about their fits with the White Sox. I'm like, let's talk to someone who watched these guys play every single day. We in Chicago are just looking at their stats. We're reading articles about them. I need to fill in some blanks on both of these guys. Let's start with Conforto. So the White Sox need a right fielder. They need a second baseman. Both of these guys seem like great fits. Or maybe they're not. So we're going to try and figure this out on the podcast here because I don't know the answer. Because, okay, Michael Conforto, free agent, bats left-handed. He's 29. Hit for power for 3 years. He was amazing. And then what happened in 2021 leaves me feeling with some, I have some doubts about him. And I don't even know if I should. So tell us about Michael Conforto. Is he the guy from 2017 and 2020, or is he the guy that struggled last season?
Well, I think he's both. You know, I think that he's the guy that, I think his biggest problem is that he gets into his head too much. You know, when he does start to slump, it becomes this whole thing for him to try to get out of it. Now he's trying to tweak his swing. Now he's watching video all the time. Now he's doing things that he really doesn't do. He's not one of those guys that can just get out of his head and go up there and swing the bat and put himself back to where he was. You know, he really puts a lot of work in and maybe overworks himself to try to get out of those slumps when he's in them. On the other hand, when he's hitting well, I think that's when he is at ease. And when he is the guy that is really just able to go up there and block everything out and swing the bat and do what he's supposed to do at the plate. He's a dynamic player. You know, he's really improved himself as an outfielder. We were told when he was coming up to the major leagues that, you know, he might not be a very good outfielder. And he's really never shown that he's not. He played a pretty good right field at Citi Field, which is kind of a hard right field to play. There's some indentations in the wall out there. It's a little bit of a nook and cranny out there in right field, and he's been able to handle that pretty well. He's got a good arm. But obviously, if the White Sox signed him, or if anybody signed him, it's because they want him to be a guy who can hit 30 home runs and drive in 100 runs. And I think he can be that guy. He's, you know, when he was coming up, Keith Hernandez predicted he would win a batting title in the major leagues. I mean, this is a guy who's a real hitter, a first-round pick, and got to the big leagues very quickly. You know, you have to deal with the pressures in New York. I don't think Chicago's too much different when it comes to that. But there was a lot of intensity toward Michael Conforto in New York because he was a first-round pick and because he was supposed to be this great player. I think he is a great player, and I would not be surprised if he signs somewhere and becomes a perennial all-star, an MVP candidate, because deep down, that's who he is. He's good enough to be that guy, and he wants to be that guy, and I think that the potential is still there for him to do that. So we'll see. Wherever he goes, it kind of unlocks him a little bit and makes him into the star that he should be.
You said something in the beginning that had me harking back to Paul Konerko, because Konerko was like that, where he got in his head sometimes, and actually a lot of times. And when he struggled in the seasons, I think he had two seasons where he just couldn't get out of it. He couldn't get out of his own way, and he had really bad years. But after these literally right after these bad years, he would just become the Paul Konerko that we know, and he'd be fine. Maybe that's a little bit like Conforto. And I looked at his numbers here. I mean, 2019, 33 homers, 92 RBIs. In 2020, 54 games, he slashed .322, .412, .515. But last season, he bats .232, OPS plus of 101. So there was talk about, well, he had COVID in spring training, and that may have hampered him physically at the start of the year. What was going on with him, and did that really come into account as to why his numbers were so bad last season?
You know, that never really came up, and mm-hmm. and never really was a storyline at all, that Conforto's COVID battle had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. He never mentioned it once. You know, I think the Mets as a team had a lot of issues offensively in 2021. You know, they changed hitting coaches about a month into the season. Chili Davis got fired, and I think really the players didn't take too kindly to that. You know, Chili was a very popular figure. I think Michael especially had a good relationship with Chili Davis, and had obviously one of his best seasons, although in the shortened year, with Chili as the hitting coach. So a new hitting coach came in, a guy they didn't really know, a guy that didn't have a lot of experience even as a hitting coach. And I think that there were some problems with communication, with the way that the Mets were going about their hitters meetings, and maybe too much information was being given. You know, you kind of heard some rumblings about, well, they're saying that on 2-2, this pitcher throws a slider 70% of the time. So you're up there thinking about it, but if it's one of those 30% of the time that he doesn't, well, then what? You're kind of stuck. And I think that the Mets looked very cautious at the plate a lot of the time last season as a team. You know, McNeil had his worst year. Dominic Smith had his worst year. Lindor had his worst year. So it wasn't just Michael Conforto that struggled on that team in 2021. If it was, maybe you can look at some of these other things and pinpoint exactly what he was doing. But I think there was a problem with the team's entire approach and very few guys ended up rising above it. Brandon Nimmo had a really nice year. Pete Alonso had, I think, what you can expect from him in a given season. Other than that, I think everybody pretty much struggled. James McCann, former White Sox catcher, struggled badly in 2021 at times. It was pretty much team-wide. So I think that Conforto can, of course, put some of that on his problems. But I think there were some things with him, too. And maybe the pressure of free agency coming up got to him, of being a leader got to him. And I think that there, you know, I think when he does sign that contract, he's going to feel like some of that pressure is off.
What kind of leader is he? How respected is he in that clubhouse?
You know, it's an interesting question because he's, you know, you mentioned Konerko before, and you could see some similarities personality wise too. You know, Konerko is always very thoughtful in his post game answers and reflective, and, you know, kind of, you know, he wasn't an abrasive personality at all. He was kind of low key. And I think Michael is all of those things. He's a low key guy, but he's also someone that would lead by example more than he would be this rah-rah guy in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I think the Mets needed more leadership in the clubhouse last year. And I think because Michael wasn't necessarily a voice for that, he was more of an example guy, you know, that kind of got lost a little bit. But I think that he's a good fit for any clubhouse. He's well-liked. You know, if you saw his last couple games with the Mets, they were emotional, especially his last game at Citi Field. He made this great catch in the ninth inning and got a standing ovation from the fans there, who realized it was probably the last time they'd see him in a Mets uniform at Citi Field. Lots of hugs and tears in the dugout from Michael Conforto and his teammates, knowing this was the last time they'd play with him. So he's very well-liked. He's a great guy. I mean, one of the best guys that you'll ever be around covering a baseball team. He's a terrific teammate, a terrific guy in the clubhouse, a terrific interview. And I think any team that does have Michael Conforto will be lucky to have.
So why are the Mets letting him go?
Yeah, you know, that's I think it's because that they don't want to pay him that money for what's been an inconsistent career. Mm-hmm. You know, you if you give him, I don't know, whatever it is, 5 years, $100 million, or 6 years, $125 million, I think that you kind of expect that he's going to be one of your best players, a middle-of-the-order guy who's going to put those numbers up, 30 homers, 90 to 100 RBIs, be an all-star consideration just about every year. And to this point, you know, he really hasn't been that guy. I do think the way that the Mets have gone about their offseason, the one hole they really have now seems to be right field. I think that they
actually, after all that, and they've been the busiest team.
Right. And I think that they could actually use him now. I thought before that it wouldn't work anymore, that it just wasn't the right place for him. But now it might be. You know, they've really boosted the leadership in the clubhouse. They got all the guys they've signed are guys that are supposed to be clubhouse leaders. Scherzer and Eduardo Escobar, Starling Marte, all those guys have great reputations. I think Conforto would actually flourish coming back to New York. But, you know, I think that maybe for the price tag, that they want someone who's a little bit more consistent for what they think Conforto is going to make money-wise.
I'm glad you finished with that, because I don't know what this guy's going to get. And I know he's got Boris as his client, so you know he's going to be going after a multi-year deal. But, I mean, it might be best for him to sign a one-year deal because of the questions that everybody is having. Like, well, who was he last year? Because that wasn't him. Why would a team give him a 4 or 5 year deal? I mean, if it's 4 or 5 years, $100 million, that's the largest contract the White Sox would have given to anybody in their history. And it's going to be to Michael Conforto coming off a bad year. I can't see the White Sox doing that. From where I'm sitting, what do you think he's going to get?
Well, they were pretty confident in turning down the qualifying offer. The Mets gave him one. You know, when that comes out to 19, close to 20 million, you know, Syndergaard was given one too, and then he signed for 25 million with the Angels. So there's money out there rolling around. And if Michael Conforto feels like there is a contract that is of interest to him in that 4 to 6 year range, then I think he goes for it. Now, maybe it's more of a 2 to 3 year deal that he signs still for bigger money. You know, he's from Seattle. He grew up idolizing Griffey. The Mariners just lost Kyle Seager, a left-handed bat with power. It makes a lot of sense for Michael to just go back home to Seattle and kind of fulfill that dream of playing for the Mariners and being a guy there in a kind of a lower stakes environment too. You know, obviously they want to win in Seattle, and they had a great year in 2021, but there's the mounting pressure of the media and the fans, I think, is less there. And I think Conforto would be best fit in a place like that. So we'll see. I do think some team out there is going to find their way to Michael Conforto and give him pretty close to the contract that he wants, whether that's the White Sox or the Mets or a team that, you know, maybe is not one we're thinking of. We'll see. But I think he'll find close to what he wants.
I did read that he lives in Scottsdale in the offseason, so that helps for a team like Seattle or the White Sox. We'll see. And I know the White Sox have been in this long search for a lefty power bat. Maybe the answer is Gavin Sheets. After all of this, Gavin Sheets, 11 homers, 34 RBIs in, 50-something games. You projected out over a 162-game season. That's 33 homers, 102 RBIs for Gavin Sheets. So he might be the answer in the end for right field, but I don't know. You know, you haven't swayed me to say we need to have Michael Conforto in right field. I feel like, yeah, I would – 1 year, a $20 million deal, let's see what we get. But is Michael Conforto coming to the White Sox for a one-year deal worth 20? I can't see that.
I just – you know, you are going to get a few good years, three, four good years out of it. You know, he's 29. He's still in the prime of his career. He is capable. And I do think the White Sox are still missing a piece or two, you know, watching them in the playoffs. And I did one of their games on Fox in September. And you just got the sense that they're a good team and there's a lot there, but that they still need a little bit more to really be a championship contender. And I think they kind of saw that when they played Houston. They just looked a little bit like a second tier playoff team compared to the teams that really can win a World Series. And does Michael Conforto put you closer to that, to being that? I think he could. And I think that Tony La Russa would really like having Michael Conforto on the team. I think he's a guy that would really be kind of what Tony likes, the type of player that Tony likes having around. And I think he'd be a good fit there, but we'll see. Again, you're kind of paying for what you hope is a more consistent player than what he's been.
Let's move now to Jeff McNeil. Oh, this is interesting. Jeff McNeil, who on paper seems like an incredible fit for the White Sox, lefty bat, second base. He also plays left and right and third. From 2018 to 2020, bat over 300 all three seasons and made the All-Star team in 2019. And then, like Conforto, last year, everything just plummeted. His numbers just went, you know, he batted 251. Everything went south, a 679 OPS. And I'm sure you've seen the story by Pat Ragazzo of Fan Nation, who reported a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was a week ago. The sources tell him the Mets are interested in shopping McNeil after the lockout ends. So a lot to unpack here. Your thoughts on Jeff McNeil as a second baseman? Do you think he gets traded?
Well, the Mets are, you know, they've added a lot of players. We think there will be a DH in the National League in 2022. We don't know. So there's kind of a logjam as far as players that the Mets have brought in and that they still have on their roster. J.D. Davis is still on their roster. Dominic Smith is still on their roster, and so is McNeil. You know, these three guys, I think out of the three of them, you can maybe keep one or two, but you really can't keep all three and get everybody the kind of playing time that they need. Plus, Robinson Cano is coming back. You know, he's got two more years on his contract still, and he's a second baseman. You hope he's a DH if there is one, but if he's not, then he's a second baseman. So where does that leave McNeil? You know, he's versatile. He can play the corner outfield. He could play third. He can play second. He's not going to really hit for power, although he kind of did a couple of years ago. I think he had 23 home runs in 2019. A lot of those were in the second half. You know, he's a guy who really is more of a kind of a Wade Boggs prototype. He's just going to spray the ball around. He's not going to strike out very much. He's going to get base hits. And what kind of value is that, having that versatile player who's going to put the ball in play a lot to a team like the White Sox? We'll see, because McNeil, I think, did hit into some bad luck last year. I think that there were a lot of times where he hit the ball hard and somebody was sprawling around on the ground making a catch or robbing him of a base hit. I think some of those numbers just by luck will go back up to where he needs them to be. You know, he was an all-star in 2019, and I think that there's still a lot of talent there for McNeil. But again, as far as fit for the Mets, you know, they like versatility, but I don't know, you know, there was obviously an issue there with Lindor. I think that, you know, there's some volatility with McNeil because he really takes it hard when he makes an out. I mean, just about any out, he's slamming his helmet and he's throwing his bat and he's ripping up the dugout. And I think that can get tired to teammates because I think that it sometimes comes off as if Jeff only cares about what's happening with Jeff instead of what's happening with the team.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that with you because clearly he had a problem with Lindor, and I'm reading this article by Pat Ragazzo. And so what happened was what Lindor grabbed McNeil by the throat and pinned him against the wall in the dugout tunnel before teammates rushed down the steps to break it up. This was over, I guess, a misplayed ground ball up the middle. And it was he just not liked in that Mets clubhouse? What happened with Jeff McNeil?
Yeah, you know, at one time, you know, McNeil kind of came up with all those guys. He and Alonso were close, and Dominic Smith. They all kind of came up together, and they all spoke very highly of McNeil. 2019, he had a great year. 2020 even had a good year. You know, he was somebody that was supposed to be this contributor. And then he and Lindor had some miscommunications early on in the 2021 season. There were a few instances, including one at Wrigley, where they were shifted over and a ground ball was hit right in the middle of them. And they both just kind of went after it and kind of got in each other's way and couldn't make the play. Happened three times in like the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And that last time, the one you're referring to, resulted in some sort of physical altercation. I mean, the Mets are coming into the dugout and all of a sudden you see, it was actually Conforto who you first saw, just kind of looked like he saw a ghost and started sprinting into the tunnel. And that's where this physical altercation occurred between Lindor and McNeil. You know, it was reported that Lindor grabbed McNeil and maybe took a swing at him too. Of course, after the game, they blamed the reaction on whether they saw a rat or a raccoon in the clubhouse, kind of a misguided, strange attempt at covering the story up. You know, Chuck, you've worked in a big market covering major league teams for a long time. There's nothing like covering the New York Mets. I mean, they are really a soap opera on a regular basis. You know, it feels like the place is just on fire all the time because so many strange occurrences happen and you have to cover so many odd controversies. You know, how about Baez and Lindor with the thumbs down situation that sparked during the summer as well? I mean, it happens every year, all the time. And, you know, McNeil found himself in the middle of it with Lindor. But I think it just got tired on his teammates, just how, especially that he was slumping, you know, how much it really affects Jeff's personality when he's not hitting well.
Yeah, this is a, I don't want to say a red flag, but certainly a yellow flag for me with him and the White Sox, just because when I hear that, you know, I want all the production. I love it. I love that he's like playing with like his hair on fire. But if it's 16 football games, okay, I think a team can deal with that. 162 baseball games, that's going to go south unless he, if not changes, he has to dial it back a little bit. I don't know if that's a good fit. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, the issue with McNeil, I think, is what is he worth, you know, to your team, because you're going to have to give something up. Mm-hmm. And I think the Mets would like pitching. You know, the Mets obviously brought in Scherzer, which is going to help in a big way, but they lost Stroman, they lost Syndergaard, and, you know, they've only brought in one starting pitcher to replace those guys at the moment. You know, they do have Carlos Carrasco. They do have Taijuan Walker. They've got a couple of young guys that they like, but they need more starting pitching and they need more relief pitching. You know, they've lost a couple of guys out of their bullpen to free agency as well, including Aaron Loop, who signed with the Angels. So what will the White Sox or any team give up to get McNeil or Dominic Smith or JD Davis? You know, what is it worth? And can the Mets get a pitcher, whether it's a reliever or a starter or a back end starter, to help them in what they need? So it'll be interesting to see what the market becomes for those guys, because the Mets have a clear need for pitching. And if the White Sox are willing to give a pitcher up to get a guy like McNeil, well, then we'll see if that's a trade fit. But I know what the Mets want. I guess the question would be, are the White Sox willing to give it up?
So I'm looking at two guys. One's Dallas Keuchel, who has 1 year left on his dealing. It's one for a lot of money, but he'd be reunited with Jameis McCann. I'm not sure that's an equal trade. McNeil has 3 years left on his deal. Michael Kopech has one more year of control than McNeil, but I'm not sure I'm making that trade. I'm not trading Michael Kopech for Jeff McNeil. That's just me. And then it could be bullpen help. You're saying that's what the Mets might want if it's not starting pitching.
Yeah, I would say that they're really looking for a number five starter. I think Keuchel could be that. And and I think that they certainly need some bullpen. I mean, maybe they bring back Familia. They don't have any left-handed relievers right now. So I think that they would be interested in some sort of pitching if they do trade any of these guys. And I can't imagine they would trade anyone of these hitters without getting some pitching back.
Yeah. All right. More from that article written by Pat Ragazzo. He said, according to multiple sources, McNeil's relationship with several members of the roster has soured over the past year. However, sources say this is not a driving force in why the team is open to trading him. The Mets have received a substantial amount of calls from other clubs about McNeil because teams value his talent, and he's also under cheap control for the next three seasons. I mean, the White Sox need a second baseman. You guys stole Eduardo Escobar away from us. I was hoping Eduardo Escobar was going to sign with the White Sox. The Mariners stole away Adam Frazier. There's like no one left. It's got to be a trade, I think, for the White Sox, unless it's Josh Harrison or someone I'm not thinking of. What do you think? You think McNeil would be a good answer for the White Sox? What they would need? Would he fill in the blanks and not make the whole team hate him?
Yeah, you know, I think fans will appreciate that he is a hard-nosed player. I think that if he is right at the plate, he's going to hit 300 or better. You know, he can go to Medina or play whatever golf course is in the area. He loves golf. He preferred to be a professional golfer, actually. His golf career kind of didn't work out, and he played baseball, but he's still a pretty good golfer. So he might like some of that in the summer. He's not going to get a walk a lot. He's not going to be this high on base percentage. He's going to basically hit his on base percentage. So you need him to be hitting in that 300 range to really feel like he's getting on base enough. He's not fast or any sort of great base runner. You know, he's a heady player. He'll always make the right decision on the field for the most part. You know, he's a good infielder. He's best at second base. So I think there's a, you know, you mentioned Adam Frazier, and I think there's a lot of similarities there. I think McNeil at his peak could be a guy like Adam Frazier. You know, whether he reaches that or not remains to be seen. But the one thing about McNeil is that you'll really marvel at the way that he puts the ball in play. With early in the count, he's looking to hit the ball hard. He's trying to yank it somewhere or drive the ball into the gap or maybe hit a home run. And then he gets to two strikes, and then it's a completely different hitter. All of a sudden, you see the golf game come out, because he'll start chipping it and wedging it and, you know, just kind of chopping at it. He'll roll it somewhere. He's desperate to put the ball in play when he gets to two strikes. It's really fun to watch how he makes contact, because he is just slapping the ball around with two strikes. He's a completely different hitter than he is with no or one strike. So it's that is fun to watch. And I think McNeil can be a good fit for a team that would like someone to play second base. So we'll see if that does kind of materialize with the White Sox.
Sounds like a guy I'm familiar with, Nick Madrigal.
Yeah, I mean, strikes. I think there's some of that too. And obviously the White Sox gave him up. But, you know, Jeff is a left-handed hitter, and I don't know if that makes any difference. And he has much more power. You know, Madrigal is probably not going to hit 20 plus home runs in a season like McNeil has. Not that Jeff is going to be counted on for that, but he could still probably give you 10 to 15 home runs on average in a good year.
I love the sound of him. I think he's exactly what they need at second base, and he gives you obviously insurance in other positions as well. I'm just cautious about whatever happened between him and Lindor and his attitude, but it sounds like his attitude is like he wants the team to win. He knows the better he plays, the better chance his team will win. And maybe that is what caused problems along the way, unless there's more to it than that.
I just think it was an unusual year for them. I think that the clubhouse was desperate for leadership and it didn't really have any. And I think some of these issues started to come up because of it. You know, Lindor got the big contract. Maybe he wasn't ready to be a real leader, though, in the clubhouse. You know, they had Marcus Stroman, who I think at times has this me or us versus the world mentality, which I understand does motivate him and tries to get him to be at his peak effort. Maybe it was too much for that clubhouse to handle. You know, I think that there were guys like McCann who had leadership qualities, but maybe his voice was muted as a new player with the team. And maybe there are guys like Jacob deGrom, who's been around, but isn't really that guy. And like I mentioned about Conforto earlier, not really that vocal leader in the clubhouse. So, and I think with a young manager on top of it, they just had problems communicating and being cohesive and as it turned out, winning in the end. But I think that maybe some of the things that happened in 2021, both offensively and in the clubhouse, you know, can be tweaked or forgotten or just kind of a one-year mix where it just didn't work. And maybe new places and new faces will help the Mets and those players elsewhere.
Now, what you're saying there makes a lot of sense to me, because James McCann had a very influential voice in the White Sox clubhouse. But I think because he was a veteran, he was having a really good season, certainly his last couple seasons. But because there was room for him to be that leader. And from what I'm hearing from you, there was a whole different dynamic going on. There has been a whole different dynamic going on with the Mets up until now. They got Max Scherzer and all this stuff's going to be probably cleaned up, I'm assuming, now Buck Showalter coming in. But yeah, I could see why, from the names that you mentioned, the situation, the pressure, that it wasn't going to take much for things to go sideways with that mix that you guys had last season. And that's why all this happened with McNeil, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, what the Mets have done this offseason is not an accident.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've gotten better on the field, and Scherzer is a game changer for them. But Mark Canna, Starling Marte, Escobar,
yeah,
are known to be great clubhouse guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Some of the best in baseball. And then you, on top of that, you bring in Buck Showalter as the manager, this kind of general type, a guy who's going to be more of an authority and garner more respect from the players. I think it all was with the intention. And the guys they left, too. I mean, you heard Buck kind of talk about addition by subtraction as well. I think that was a pretty pointed comment towards some of the guys who won't be back in New York in 2022, including Marcus Stroman and maybe to some degree Javier Baez as well. So I think that the Mets really focused on, yes, getting better on the field, but also getting a lot better in the clubhouse. And I think that's why they've done all the things they've done so far in the offseason.
Yeah. A lot of me versus we was going on with the Mets.
And maybe just kind of misguided in the we.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
just it didn't work out. Maybe the we was just going in the wrong direction based on the people who were steering the ship.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that it was necessarily complete selfishness or maybe just not really knowing how to be a leader in that sense, or maybe just thinking you're a leader and getting it wrong. I think, you know, a lot of those things were a big problem for the Mets in this last season.
All right. So who's the better fit? Who should the White Sox either sign or acquire? Do you sign Conforto? Do you acquire McNeil? What do you do?
Well, I think it's tough to give up pitching sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the White Sox feel like they have this wealth of pitching, and you're going to need to give it up to get McNeil. So, you know, do they feel like that's a position of strength for them enough? Would Keuchel be enough? Is that something they can live with to get a guy who's a good fit, a good hitter? I don't know that he's a game changer for them. I don't know that he's, you know, necessarily you get Jeff McNeil and suddenly, you know, you're a favorite to win the American League pennant. Mm-hmm. But I think you make that trade and feel good about it. I think he's the better fit for the White Sox. It always seems like it's easier, and I'm not spending any money, but it seems like it's easier to just throw money at a guy and hope for the best than it is to actually give up a piece to get someone. So maybe it's easier to get Michael Conforto when maybe McNeil is more of an answer for what the White Sox really need. And it's not like the White Sox are known to throw money around either. You know, that's not that they won't spend. I mean, they're kind of cautious about how they spend and, whether they think that Michael Conforto is befitting, as you said earlier, would be one of the bigger contracts they've ever given out if they sign Conforto for what he thinks he's going to get. And I think that kind of changes the fit in terms of what he would be for them. So we'll see. I do think that McNeil in a trade is an intriguing proposition for them because he does check off a lot of boxes.
I found this box score from July 30th, 2019, which now feels like 30 years ago. Mets at the White Sox. All right. And I was silent reporting, I think, this day, because this sounded really, really familiar to me. I know I saw this like in person. And I was like, Jesus, look at these two guys. I want the White Sox to have them. Here we go. Jeff McNeil led off that day. Who batted second? Michael Conforto. The game went 11 innings. Okay. It's on the south side. Game's tied at 2. Josh Osich comes out of the bullpen for the White Sox. He first gives up a 2-run homer to McNeil. Make it 4-2. Then Michael Conforto comes to the plate. What does he do? Solo shot. Mets win 5-2.
Yeah.
So the 1-2 punch, McNeil and Conforto. We'll see if either of them, how about both of them, end up with the White Sox? I don't know.
You know, the most impressive thing McNeil did in that series against the White Sox in Chicago was when he was playing right field for whatever reason, and there was a ball hit down the line. And it was just the netting, I think, just
got up.
And he sprawled himself, springboarded himself. He used the net like it was a trampoline. And he went flying into the net, caught the ball, and then just bounced right back onto the field to play. It was the netting was all brand new. So nobody had really ever done that before. And it was amazing to watch McNeil, you know, throw his body at the net and use it as not a protection for the fans, but as a protection for himself to make a crazy catch in foul territory.
I just remember watching that series and I'm going, wait, these are two lefties. White Sox need this. And here we are 2 years, 3 years later. And both of them might be available for the White Sox. And we'll see if it happens. I can't decide who I want more or less. They both have I'm love it. They check so many boxes. And then I'm kind of like, I don't know. And I don't want to who am I giving up if I get McNeil? How much you paying Conforto?
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not Rick Hahn. I don't know what they do. It's a puzzle.
Yeah. You know, you tend to focus on the warts when you think about these types of things. You think about the why not more than the why. I think there's a lot of reasons why you'd want Michael Conforto and Jeff McNeil.
Yeah.
And, maybe those reasons outweigh the why nots, because I think for both of those guys, you know, you could really see them developing or continuing to develop into star players, especially Conforto. I think that there's still so much there that for him to unlock. I mean, this guy, we tend to see it with the Mets where guys leave and put up great numbers. You know, Daniel Murphy left and was an MVP candidate as soon as he did. Ahmed Rosario was in that Lindor trade, and he clearly had his best season in the big leagues this past year for Cleveland. So, you know, it certainly happened. Travis d'Arnaud's become a star catcher for the Atlanta Braves since leaving the Mets. It happens where guys might leave there or leave other teams and go to a new place and become the guy that they should have been all along. And maybe that does happen to Michael Conforto. It would not surprise me at all to see Michael Conforto really reach his potential no matter where he signs. And if that happens to be the White Sox, then I think that's a huge boost for whoever gets him, because he really has the potential to be great. I think McNeil's potential is just to continue to be what he's been at the major league level. I think if you get him to hit 300 again and get him to be that guy who's putting the ball in play all the time and getting base hits, that's really who he is. But I think Conforto is the one who can really be a superstar. And, you know, maybe you get him cheaper than you would most superstars because he's coming off a down year.
All right. This has been enlightening and just interesting. And it helps. You've helped fill in a lot of blanks for me with both these guys. I'm not sure it's left me, or I've concluded that they need either of them or both of them, because I'm still not sure. But I think either way, if the Sox sign Conforto, if they acquire McNeil, they'll be a better team because of it. I think at the very least, that's what you're getting.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I think that with McNeil, you know, you are giving up some pitching. I don't know that it's going to be someone that's going to break your back if you give him up. And same thing with Conforto and the money. Is it a back-breaking contract if it doesn't work out? You know, I don't know. But I think that you certainly are going to have a better White Sox team with either of those guys. And I think La Russa will appreciate the way that both of them play.
Awesome. Wayne, I appreciate your time and your knowledge. And it's great to see you. And we'll see you down the road. Maybe after a trade is made or a signing, we'll have you back on the podcast and talk about
it. Anytime. Absolutely. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. That's a wrap for this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage at www.wintrust.com/Sox. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, our Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast is over.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.